Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas. And I am here with Martin. You know what I'm going to say? Don't you know what I'm going to say, Martin? What, guess.
I hope it's not Fancy Boy.
Well, just Fancy. No? It's Martin Fancy Willis.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because... we've talked about this many times in Martin's other world, his grounded, normal life, when he's not wearing his UFO podcast cape and mask. And if you haven't seen his cape and mask, it's really cute there. It's kind of, but anyway, he does antiquing and antique stuff, and he picked up some fancy French stuff. And it made me think of calling him Fancy, and he said, please don't call me Fancy. And you know, that is essentially begging me to call you Fancy.
I know. Don't throw me in the briar.
I haven't heard of that. See, that's a fancy statement. That's a fancy kind of... because a lot of us normal people are like, what'd you talk about? Throw him in the briar patch. What's that? We're not familiar with your fancy terms.
That's right. Yeah, we'll have to Google. We'll have to Google it. Yeah.
So it does sound like you had a fun day, though, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was. You know, the average listener that's into UFOs probably isn't interested in it, but it is very beautiful French Napoleon items. You know, Napoleon III mostly, but just real fancy schmancy gold gilded. Blah, you know.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Fun stuff. Yeah.
Pretty cool. So let's talk about my guest. So I have a very interesting guest. Her name is Susan J. Palmer. She is a sociologist and an author. So she's done a lot. She's done some teaching, but she does a lot of research. And she's renowned for the field of new religions. She's written 11 books, but... she is very interested in UFO religions. In fact, she was at the UFO Congress. And anybody who was there, or, you know, even those of you who listened to this show who weren't there, know that I did a talk on UFOs and religion. And the second part of my talk is about this exact topic, new religions, and essentially how the whole UFOs and especially the idea of extraterrestrials is influencing modern religions, but beyond that, even society. And so I love the topic. She has written a couple books on this, one called Aliens Adored, about the Raelians, and then another one called The Nuwabian Nation. And this is a group where the leader kind of believes he's or says he's an extraterrestrial, but it's a weird kind of cult. We use that word. We define that word because we both have ideas about what that means, but you'll hear us talk about that. But the point being that this guy kind of changes what he says and stuff, but he believes in he might be alien. So, of course, there are other organizations. There's Heaven's Gate and others, and we get into all of that, and I think it is just simply fascinating. So I was really happy to get in contact with her, and I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did.
Wow, that's great. Now, I've heard people claim that a lot of people in ufology are acting like ufology is a religion. Did you actually talk about that as well?
Well, that's the whole point. That's what all of this is about. I mean,
I thought you meant like the influence on religion, you know, religions. Is this an awkward moment?
It is, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so multiple topics, including that. And yeah, so that's what we get into, is exactly that. And so that is the meat of what we're talking about.
You know, I'm going to listen to this show.
You should.
It does sound interesting.
You really should. I think that you'll like it. Yeah, you in particular will like it. I think everybody's going to like it that listens, because I know that you and I are fascinated in these ideas, and I know others are as well. And, you know, a lot of people get upset. I don't like to use the word I believe in UFOs. I know. But, you know, or I don't believe in aliens, I know. And it's like, okay. And they get mad when you say, what do you believe? Do you believe this or do you believe that? But I'm sorry, people. Belief is a big part of this. I mean, I believe that, you know, for instance, I don't know, what's a great case? Phoenix Lights, I've been talking about. Yeah, I'm about to talk about that in a minute. I believe that that was a great case, that that has not been answered. Others believe differently. It's a term we use, and it means something, and it's a valuable term. And just because we use the term belief doesn't mean we're negating ourselves. Many people believe in their religious, you know, whatever they subscribe to that way. And that's fine. I believe, you know, everybody has a right to believe in religion or not, or in whatever religion they want. So I think we need to be, you can't just throw away the word belief and say that, you know, that changes things in any way, because it just doesn't. We don't live in a world of cut and dry. We live in a world that's, you know, it's not black and white. Mm-hmm. It's more gray.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. And, you know, I mean, it's also, you know, it's just part of the mystery, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I totally get what you're saying. You know, when people say they believe, you can have beliefs, but without really knowing, you know, that's all it really is.
Yeah. Or, you know, proving necessarily. So, yeah. And, you know, and yeah. So that's what it's all about. So this is going to be fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. But, yeah, I didn't have a show last week. And the big reason is because the Phoenix Lights. I was doing, so there's this new movie coming out. And I could clarify a bit here. There's this new movie coming out called Phoenix Forgotten. And this movie is based off the Phoenix Lights. Now, don't get confused, because there's another movie based off the Phoenix Lights that is a very similar. They're both found footage movies. They're both start with the sighting of the Phoenix Lights, and then they have, there's these kids go into the desert and meet some aliens, and stuff goes down, and they go missing, and this found footage is found to find out what happened to these people. So both of these movies are like that. Last year at the UFO Congress, we played the movie Phoenix Incident. And of course, you all heard me interview, I think I've interviewed him once or twice, but Keith Arum, the guy who created that movie. And great guy. I've spoken to him recently. In fact, we have an ad for his movie on our website currently, because it's on iTunes now. So, and there's going to be some more exciting stuff going on with him and his film, and some other stuff which people are going to really like. And anyway, this new movie, Phoenix Forgotten, is very similar. Interestingly enough, one of the producers is Ridley Scott. But I did an interview with them about the Phoenix Lights. They were going to use it for some marketing. And then they asked me if I wouldn't mind doing some interviews about the Phoenix Lights, the actual incident, around town. So if you go to my Facebook, you'll see me on all the local news stations, on Fox, on ABC, on NBC. I did a couple of the radio stations. In fact, one of the radio stations did a Facebook Live, and I posted that on my Facebook too. So you'll be able to see all of these videos and interviews I did. But I was so busy running around doing these early last week that I wasn't able to do a show. And But I was promoting open minds, guys. You know, I was sharing, you know, some of the credible information about this field with the wider public. So, you know, don't. I hope you're not too upset with me. Are you really upset with me, Martin?
Well, I'll get over it.
Oh, geez, yeah. But I mean, does my explanation of what I was doing help at least?
Sure.
Doesn't sound like it does, huh?
No, I was watching your Facebook posts, and you were knee deep in those interviews, like one right after the other. So
yeah,
I'm gonna, you know, I'll catch you some slack on this one.
All right, thanks.
I'll give you a mulligan.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that's where I was doing, but we've got a great show this week, so that makes up for it. And we've got Martin back, and for goodness sakes, how wonderful is that? And
wow.
He's got some UFO news to share with us. I think he's supposed to anyway. He better.
That's right.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Australian witness photographs cylinder UFO.
Ooh.
Yeah. So an Australian witness at Yungella, I believe that might be how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Yungella, I don't know how you, anyway.
Yungella.
A reporter watching and photographing a cylinder-shaped object moving about 500 feet overhead in a straight line without a noticeable sound. And this is a MUFON case. This happened back on March 14th, 2007. And he says, you know, basically his son and him looked up and pointed at, he said, was the moon? No, it wasn't the moon. And his wife looked to see what they were pointing at and saw a white cylindrical rectangular object above the clouds. Now, when you watch the movie of this, a video that is posted, you'll hear them say, oh, those darn clouds in the way, or they may say some other words. I'm not really sure.
Mm.
And you don't, it's really hard to see in the video. However, they took also, I believe they took some stills with a iPad or something like that. And the photographs, you can see an object. Now, this could definitely be a balloon. I mean, that is one of the possibilities. It was sort of, you know, cylindrical, not the only cylindrical case reported on the website, of course. But anyway, it was sort of, a, you know, cylindrical and rectangular. And moving, did you get a chance to look at this, Alejandro? I wanted to know what your thoughts were after you looked at it.
Yeah, I did. It's just, it's like you said, it's hard to say, and it could be a balloon. I think they said that it was moving fast, that they thought it was moving too fast or something. But, yeah, it's hard to rule anything out completely because it's a small clip. And they even say the clip was not very good. But they did get some stills, and who knows? Yeah, it could be a reflective balloon type of thing, or not.
Or not, yes. And, you know, when they say it moves along fast, those things are always hard to judge. You know, there are some high winds also in the altitudes. But you just can't tell how far away this thing is. So
yeah.
That's what's always hard to judge, you know, the speed and all that, you know.
Yeah, and it gets hard to tell because the wind changes at different elevations, and maybe there's barely, if any, wind where you are standing on the ground, but there could be a very fast-moving wind at some altitude. And,
that's right.
So it does get difficult to tell. There was a similar object seen, but no picture taken in California, but they did post a picture of what it looked like, what they were seeing. And this is on March 16th at 2:45, so another daytime. Daytime ones are always more fun, too, because we always get these nighttime lights in the sky type of thing. So California, another one, which is nice because for a while there, Roger was posting, and these are both from Roger Marsh, from MUFON. These are MUFON cases. He's posting lots of triangle cases, and I asked him, why is that? And he said, I don't know. I guess, he always tries to write stories about cases that have some visuals or people drawing pictures of objects, and it makes sense that, you know, the most seen, if you look at the statistics, are points of light, by far, and triangles are actually a small percentage. However, they're one of the larger, they're, when it comes to actual shapes, you know, that's one of the more common shapes. So it makes sense that people, if they're going to draw something, would draw that because you wouldn't be a very interesting picture to just draw a point of light.
Right.
But so yeah, so he does have a couple other triangle stories that he wrote about, and then a video from Austria. What do you think of this? Did you get to watch this Austrian video?
I did not yet.
Oh,
no.
Shoot.
I'm trying to look for it right now.
Okay, yeah, it's on the front page. Austrian witness videotapes unknown light in the sky. And I'm going to talk slow to give you time. This was on January 4th, 2017. Two friends were driving home when they saw these lights. It was about 10:30 p.m. It was completely dark in a secluded area, they say, and they saw these lights. In the pictures, you can't tell so much as in the video that the lights do change colors. So people had suggested they were three drones. Some people suggested it could be a triangle, but three lights are always going to be in a triangle shape, and the way they move certainly does not look like they are one object. But, you know, somebody noted, and you can hear at the beginning of the video, a whirring like a drone, you know, like a quadcopter motor. But only for a few seconds at the beginning. I think maybe if it was, if they were the drones, that maybe one was going up and getting high enough, and it got high enough to where you couldn't hear it at one point. And they were all high enough where you couldn't hear them. But yeah, they're very colorful and moving around. They do look pretty high up there. So it's another, I don't know, type of situation.
Now, do a lot of people fly drones like in the dark at night?
Yeah,
seems
I think
like it'd
so.
It's really hard to land. No?
Well, if they're all lit up, they're lit. So, I mean, if you've got, and lots of the new drones are lit up. And I think everybody puts lights on their drones because that's fun. And I think that would be the most fun to fly it at night.
Mm. So that makes it even harder to figure out what's what these days,
yeah,
really.
Makes it even harder to figure out what the heck.
Where is it going to go from here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
know,
dude.
You have to invent some type of drone detection unit or something.
Mm-hmm. Drone Detector 2000.
Yeah, that's right. An app on your iPhone, maybe.
Let's patent it right now.
All right.
Before someone else does.
It's a good one.
One of our tricky listeners.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any more news? Oh, I got one other news. This is cool.
Oh. Okay.
So I interviewed Cheryl Costa lately because she wrote this UFO desk reference, USA 2001, I think, to 2015. It's all these sighting reports and graphs and stuff like that. Of course, my listener, I think that was my last interview. We had her on talking about that. The New York Times wrote about her today.
I saw that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Which is cool because she's really done kind of a grassroots thing. It was a self-published book. Usually books like Leslie Kane's that gets published by a large publisher gets the most attention. But she self-published. But she hit the streets. I mean, she's a journalist herself. And she emailed and got a hold of all these different media organizations and has gotten a few stories out there. But she hit the big time here with the article in the New York Times.
Amazing. Good for her.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? That's really cool. So in the headline, something like UFOs are seen everywhere, and this book proves it, I think is what the title is, which is a
yeah,
cool
and all
title.
Shapes and sizes or something like that, yeah.
Yep. Neat, huh?
Right, yes.
Yeah, cool.
That was my belated Australian g'day.
That's nice, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure the Australians will really enjoy.
I should have did that when I did the report on the Australian story.
Well,
sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least better late than never.
That's
how I feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So any more news that you would like to do in an Australian accent?
Oh, I think that's it for me, mate.
Okay. Well, I think that after hearing that accent, the listeners will appreciate that.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Mr. Willis. And you go off and play with your fancy French stuff. And I wish I could see it. I want to be a fancy guy, too.
Yeah, I got pics, man.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and hear my interview with Susan. I am very happy to welcome to the show Susan J. Palmer. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Alejandro.
So I'm really excited to have you on because, as the listeners know, you know, this topic was part of my talk at the last symposium or at the last UFO Congress. And I guess, how did you get interested in the whole idea of these UFO and extraterrestrial religions?
Well, it all started because I was going to the psychic fair in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I saw a stand where these men were dressed in white, sort of white suits, and they all had long stringy hair, and there's a big picture of a UFO, and I thought, wow, a UFO religion, I've never studied one of those. What my field is what's called New Religious Studies, so I'm a sociologist who specializes in, you know, new religions, like baby religions I call them, but in the media they call them cults. So I went up, and it was the Raelians. I never even heard of them. This was in 1984, I think. And they said, how would you like to enter a competition? I said, sure. So they had me fill out a questionnaire, and it was extremely simple, like, does the sun revolve around the moon or not? You know, really basic stuff. And so I filled it out. And the next day, I got a phone call from a guide saying, congratulations, you won the competition. The prize is we send a guide to your house to give you the message.
Ah.
So I said, great. You know, for my research thing, this was great. So I phoned my friend James, who was with me, you know, when I went to the psychic fair, and he'd also filled out a competition thing. And I said, guess what? I won the competition. He said, well, guess what? I did too. And I said, oh, what a coincidence. And he said, Susan. So the guy came to my house, and I was really interested. And I started studying the Raelians. I studied them for about 15 years.
Wow.
Which really involved taking my students to their meetings. You know, I teach a course called Cults. I took my students to the meetings, and they would do interviews and membership surveys. And I interviewed Rael himself twice.
Hmm.
And so I ended up writing this book called Aliens Adored about the Raelian movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess I felt it was important is to clarify kind of this idea, because it's not as solid as maybe many people think, of what a religion is versus what a cult is. And how would you define that?
Well, it's not solid at all. I mean, yesterday's cults are today's religions, and today's cults might be, you know, major religions in the future. We don't really know.
Yeah.
I would call them baby religions. According to the media and the anti-cult movement, they're fake religions or dangerous religions. So it's really, you know, it's one of these terms that can be used in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, because for instance, I'm not really a religious person. So really, the beliefs that a so-called cult would have, to me, are not necessarily that different than many of the mainstream religions. So the line, especially in that case, is very blurred. And like you said, that's what's really fascinating about all of this, is that these, again, so-called cults may be the major religions of the future. And how wild is that so many of them are popping up that are based on this ET idea?
Well, just to backtrack a little bit, one of the defining characteristics of a, quote, cult is it has a charismatic leader, a leader who is believed to have magical powers or some kind of divine status. And this person is alive or recently dead. So they're young movements with a very powerful leader who is, you know, believed to be divine.
Mm-hmm.
And in this way, they're different than the Catholic Church, of course.
When it comes...
You asked about UFO religions. Well, there's only a handful that I know about.
Mm-hmm.
Though some religions sort of add a spice of UFO-ness, you know, later on. But Sorry, what did you ask about UFO religions?
Oh, I was just noting how it's interesting, like what you're studying is that, you know, these groups are popping up and becoming more and more popular. So, like the Ray Alien. So, maybe some background on them. What does Rael believe? What is the religion based off of?
Well, Rael was brought up to be a militant atheist in France, and he claims when he was 27 that he encountered an extraterrestrial while he was walking on a volcanic crater. And this being invited him aboard the spaceship and gave him a Bible lesson. And the message is that the Earth was created by superior scientists from another planet. And the Bible is a sort of warped version of a ship's log, which describes how they created life on our planet, you know, through DNA. And it's a kind of warning that humanity must not destroy itself by abusing the tools of science.
Do you think that Rael believes this, or is he, just a kind of a showman?
Well, my impression is he believes it. I interviewed him twice, and he seemed very sincere and passionate. I've actually watched him give speeches very often, and he has quite an original mind. You never know what he's going to say next, so it's kind of hard to figure out his motivation. But I think I would give him the credit of the doubt and say he believes this. I don't think it's possible for someone to start a new religion just out of kind of, you know, well, for personal gain, or you have to have passion, you have to have conviction, you know, like you can't be a great artist and musician if you just want to be a millionaire. You've got to have talent.
Yeah, and I guess one of the aspects of the Raelians, which is interesting and unique, is that they and I think can hamper their credibility, but gets them popularity, is their kind of way they market. So I mean, they get a lot of attention when they do these topless marches and the whole they did the whole thing about cloning and how they believe they had cloned something, I think a child, is what they claimed. So I think
Well, that's
that.
right. The Raelians are unusual compared to a lot of different, well, what the media calls cults or new religions, which most of them, a lot of them don't like media attention and like to keep a low profile. But the Raelians deliberately send out press releases and try to get as much media attention as they can. And the reason is that Rael says that the extraterrestrials gave him the mandate to spread the message. In other words, it's their duty to let all humanity know about the aliens and the message that the world was created by the Elohim and that they love us and that they're watching over us and that they don't want us to blow the planet to pieces. So they're in a sense doing their religious duty by going for publicity.
And it's worked, I believe. I guess from when you first discovered them, they've probably grown quite a bit.
Yes, they have. I discovered them, I guess, in 1984, and they claim 40,000 members, and now they claim over 80,000 or 120,000. The numbers change all the time, and it's impossible to check up, of course.
And have they spread throughout the world more?
Well, yes, when I first encountered, when they started in Quebec, which was in the late 70s, they only existed in France and Quebec. And today they're in many different countries, maybe 60 different countries. They're in Japan, they're in Asia, they're in Australia, Latin America, and Africa. So they're, and of course, Europe. So they really have, they're international.
Do you find that the devotion of the members of the Raelian organization is as great as other religions, or do they take it more lightly? Is it more kind of a fun thing?
Well, there are two types of members. There are the core members, which they call the structure, and then there are sort of affiliate members who've taken the baptism and acknowledge the Elohim as their creators, but they might not go to very many meetings, and they might not necessarily obey their rules, and they might not pay their, you know, their membership dues. But the members of the structure are much more committed, and they have a sort of a six-level hierarchy, and they're expected to spread the message, in other words, do missionary work, promote the movement by, you know, paying their tithing, by helping organizing events, by basically serving Rael, who's the prophet, and that, and so, you know, you find layers of commitment. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, do you believe, I guess, with the Raelians, because they're out there, people know more about them. Do you think that they're dangerous at all?
No, well, they're committed to peace. I mean, Rael is very much against violence, and he was very, very intolerant. In France, they had this law, they had this crime passionnel thing where it was okay for a man to kill his wife if she cheated on him, you know, out of a fit of jealousy. Well, he was really outraged by that, and he's constantly preaching peace. And so certainly in their ideology or in their system of ethics, peace is a major value. But also, if you actually look at their history, I can't really think of any cases of violent mm-hmm. behavior, and they're not into guns or anything like that. So no, I wouldn't see them as a violent group in any way.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to other groups, because there are others. And for instance, you wrote another book on, and I'm not sure how to pronounce this, the Nawabian.
Oh, Nawabian, yes.
Nation. And yes. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, this isn't, I wouldn't really say this is a UFO cult. The leader, whose name was Dwight York, but he goes by the name Dr. Malachi Z. York, he started out as a black Hebrew. In other words, the idea that the black people of America are the lost tribes of the Jews, or, you know, are the Jews in the Bible, the ancient Hebrews. And there are many groups like that, of course, in the U.S. And then he switched to becoming a black Muslim. But what he does is he constantly incorporates new ideas from all the different black spirituality movements in the U.S. So he's incredibly eclectic, and his groups are always changing shape. They wear new costumes. And at one time he claimed to be the great grandson of the Mahdi in the Sudan. And that's why they're called Nawabians, like Nubians, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing he did is said he was the man from the planet Risk, R-I-S-Q. So he claimed to be an extraterrestrial who'd come to teach humanity. So he changes his charismatic claim constantly. And that's what's fascinating about him, the way he's like a chameleon. He's constantly mm-hmm. changing shape. So my book was really on his extraordinary, like the way he runs his movement, which is quite unique. But he borrows this idea of Ezekiel's wheel, which is interpreted as a UFO, you know, the Ezekiel's wheel in the Bible. And the fascination you find in a lot of black nationalist movements with extraterrestrials and pyramids, and, you know, the ufology lore, which becomes incorporated. You know, for example, the Nation of Islam believes that Farrakhan and Elijah Muhammad beheld Ezekiel's wheel like a UFO. And so there's a lot of sprinkling of UFO lore in different black nationalist, you know, spiritual movements. I don't know why, but it's a fact.
Hmm. So interesting. And the Nawabians, has that group, does it have a large following?
It's really hard to tell. They never give out statistics. I used to go to their meetings in Brooklyn, New York, and you might see 10 people, 15 people. Wow. I went on a pilgrimage. They used to have this Egyptian village in Georgia, and they would have an annual pilgrimage every year, taking a bus from Brooklyn, New York, to this little town in Georgia, and so I went along with them in their bus, and that was an amazing experience. And there were quite a few people there, like maybe 300-400, who came to the annual pilgrimage. So he does have quite a lot of followers. He has bookstores. Well, the movement's changed so much, I don't really know what's happening now because he's been in jails.
Uh-oh.
You know, he was thrown in jail by the FBI. But the group had these spiritual bookshops in the major towns all over the U.S., and they would have meetings, which they call question-answer meetings, at their bookstores where the ministers would teach people in the leader's philosophy.
Why did he get thrown in jail?
Well, there's a big FBI raid, and he was accused of child molestation, but also he was hit with various RICO charges, like money laundering and not paying taxes and a whole bunch of stuff.
Ah.
So he basically didn't have a chance once they hit him with so many charges and,
Yeah, interesting. So other groups out there, you're familiar with George King and the Aetherius, and I think that's another fascinating group because that stems from the 50s, right? The whole contactee movement.
Yes. Well, George King is really interesting. Actually, the expert on this is a friend of mine named John Saliba, who is a Jesuit priest in Detroit, and he's done some study of them. And George King was into yoga and he was into theosophy, you know, this kind of type of Hindu Buddhist mysticism that was created by Madame Blavatsky. And then I think it was 1954, he was sitting in his little house in Maida Vale, London, and he felt it and he heard a voice. And it was a voice of, an extraterrestrial. And he started regularly hearing these voices, and they had a message for the humanity about how to avoid destruction and so on, and how to. So he based his whole movement on the messages he would hear from the Space Brothers.
And that this group still exists, although George King has since passed.
Yes, it still exists. It has a big center in Detroit and I think somewhere else. And
wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. But the members are celibate. They don't have children, so they tend to be getting older and older. I don't know if they'll survive. The movement will survive.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that either. Otherwise, I know that their messages are also very positive.
I don't know what you mean by positive. I mean,
meaning that it's about love and treating the world well,
peace.
And
being in touch with a higher civilization of extraterrestrials. There's another group called Unarius, and they believe that the spaceships are going to land of the Federation of 33 different intergalactic civilizations, and that we will join this big intergalactic federation in this new age of peace and knowledge. So that's what they're preparing for.
Now, and you mentioned another group that I've never heard of, Strobe. Is that how you say it in France?
Strobe?
S-T-R-O-B.
Oh, is that the one that started by
Jean
Pierre?
Yeah.
Jean Miguel. Jean Miguel was a paramedic, and he got in a very bad road accident and was actually lying on the road dying, and he claimed this beautiful being from Arcturus came and healed him, the sort of being of light. And then he started to get messages from the Arcturians, and he started a new religion. And his message is actually very similar to Rael, that we must avoid destroying ourselves through nuclear weapons and learn to live in peace and love and so on. And it's possible Rael was influenced by him, because Rael actually knew him and talks about him in his writings. And also he had this idea that, similar to Van Daniken, that the ancient civilizations were founded by extraterrestrials from other planets.
However, and all of these groups are mostly positive in that they have a positive message. They're not preaching, hurting others or themselves, but, you know, a widely known, perhaps the most widely known UFO-based or alien-based cult were Heaven's Gate, which, of course, didn't turn out well.
Well, they're more notorious than famous. I mean,
yeah,
they were a tiny little group, and they had a lot of people join and leave. So there were always, you know, places like revolving door. And in the end, I think it was 37 people committed suicide, the core group. They were a very secretive group. My friend Robert Balch is the expert on that group. And they, of course, like they were, I mean, they ended in a, they ended up in a violent way. I mean, they killed themselves. They didn't kill other people, but mm-hmm. they did kill themselves. And it seemed to be based on this very strong ideology that they had to board the spaceship to get to this other planet because the world was going to be destroyed. And they saw this wonderful life they could have, which would be like, Star Trek, you know, riding around in spaceships and visiting other planets and, you know, being more, well, they call it the level above human. They would be, you know, intelligent, wise, sexless, androgynous beings, you know, immortal and so on. Mm-hmm. And so they really believed this was the only way to achieve this. And the whole point of being in the group was you had a chance to become immortal and rise above what they call mammalian existence, you know, the, you know, just mating and defending. So, but their ideology was threatened by the fact that their second leader died, Bonnie Nettles. So they had to take this desperate step to fulfill their, you know, their dream or their vision of being these, turning into the immortal extraterrestrials.
Now, interesting enough, we just had the anniversary of when they did commit suicide. What was March 26th, 1997. And someone had contacted me from the group, so I guess there are still members, who asked if I wanted to interview them about, you know, their beliefs and the aliens and all of this stuff. I didn't feel comfortable doing that, so I didn't take them up on an offer.
Oh, you should have. That would have been so interesting. You should go for it.
Maybe, but it's a bit frightening because, you know, they still, you know, are these people going to hurt themselves again? And is this group kind of getting, having a rebirth of some sort? Do you know?
I have no idea what they're up to now. I mean, it is true that after the mass suicide of the 37, that two other members killed themselves, I think a year later, a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, of course, happened in the Solar Temple. So if there's this ideology of suicide, it can be repeated by the members who are still around.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe I still could. I could forward the information to you, too. I think he's interested in spreading the word however he can.
Oh, do that. I'll interview him. For
yeah. I'll do that and see if maybe I'll talk to him. It's just, you know, for the most part, I try to interview people who are kind of researching the whole arena, not necessarily quote unquote believers, I guess I would put it, or people who believe that they're in contact much. And especially a group like this, which, you know, the fear of potentially self-harming, and I hope, you know, none of my listeners would then, you know, join them in you know, some sort of act like this again.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that interested me that got me thinking when I went to the International UFO Conference in Phoenix in February, where I saw you, in fact, and you gave a speech, I encountered quite a few people who knew about Rael, and they seemed to think that he was a con artist or, you know, and so on. And I started to think, and then at the same time, I was listening to these experiencers, people who would get up and talk about how they met an extraterrestrial or how they'd seen a UFO and so on. And I started to wonder, like, what's the difference between Rael and these people? Mm-hmm. I mean, he went on to start a very, very highly organized baby religion in which his claim escalated from being a contactee to being a prophet, someone who the aliens talked to regularly and gave messages, right? And then he constructs a whole worldview that other people must follow if they're going to join. And so a lot of people disapprove of him, partly, I mean, the Catholic Church does, of course, and mainstream Christians, because he's what they see as a cult leader or heretic who's preaching ideas that, you know, deviate from orthodox religious beliefs. But the people I was talking to at the UFO conference seemed to disapprove of him, because they said, if you see extraterrestrials, you don't then exploit it by creating this whole edifice that glorifies yourself. So they seem to think that he kind of twisted everything. And, I mean, who knows, you know? But I thought, like, I was just wondering, like, I started to think, well, of course, I mean, if you're at the UFO conference and you hear all these people talking about their experiences in the very, very vivid, sincere way, these are ordinary people, I mean, you can't say they're all liars or crazy. So there does seem, there obviously is something going on where people are encountering this extraordinary thing. And so why do we have to reject Rael's experience just because he happens to also be the founder of a new religious movement?
I agree with you 100%, and it is distressing. But what's interesting to me is that I grew up Roman Catholic, you know, through confirmation, where you're supposed to confirm your religion, you know, they taught us about other religions, and that just opened my eyes to say, these guys have just as strong a claim to divine knowledge or wisdom as we do. So why would I subscribe to one belief when, you know, there's no more legitimacy to this one than the others? But I do agree with you that it seems that, you know, in this field, it is very similar in that a lot of those same people you're talking about who are saying, oh, you know, Rael, he's making all of this stuff up. If you ask them, well, who do you really subscribe to? What ideas do you believe in? They would probably mention one or two people who are exactly the same as Rael, who are claiming to have experiences and are gathering large followings of people through their experiences and large amounts of money, some of these people also. So I agree with you, you know, but religions kind of do the same where it's like, oh, you know, and in fact, it can be even a bit more scary in that they'll be like, oh, everybody else is going to hell except for us. You know, so everybody else is wrong but us. And it's interesting to see this kind of coagulation of these potential new religions based around kind of this modern idea of space travel and going into space and everything. And that's what really fascinates me. So I agree with you 100%. And that's why I like talking about these topics, because really the Raelian religion or the Arthurians or many of these seem just as benevolent or as any other religion. They're very positive about helping each other out and loving each other and trying to help out the world. And what's wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing that differentiates them from mainstream religions is their relationship to science, because they embrace science, and they often reject orthodox religion, and they claim to be scientific and empirical in their approach to knowledge. But of course, once you start looking at them, you realize their religion is totally faith-based. Mm-hmm. For example, Rael will say, you know, people will say, well, why don't the extraterrestrials come and appear to everybody, and then we'd all know that they created us? And Rael said, well, they don't want to start a mass panic, so they've told me, and I'm going to tell you, and you have to believe that I talked to the extraterrestrials. So you have to make this jump, leap of faith by recognizing him as a prophet and unquestioningly, which is not really any different than, you know, becoming a Muslim or a Christian.
Right, exactly. And what's interesting at these conferences and sometimes these events is that, you know, there'll be two or three people on the roster who will claim the same thing. They'll be like, I'm the only one. I'm the representative to the humans, to the aliens, and no one else is. Anybody else is a charlatan. And then they'll go on and talk. And what's interesting is I'll ask people about what they thought of the different speakers, and they'll say, you know, I really love this person and that person. And I'll ask them, well, their stories are, their worldview is completely different. And they say they're the only prophet. And so how can you believe all three of these people if they're all saying that the other one is not telling the truth? And there is this cognitive dissonance, you know, that happens that people just don't even seek to resolve often. But then they'll also have a list of people they just do not like, even though there are similar claims. So it does become fascinating how people's minds work around this. And I think it's kind of it's a little view into kind of a religion incubator, I think. Because like you said, you know, the aliens could really take off. I would not be surprised. I mean, look how Scientology's taken off. You never know.
Yeah, I like that expression, a religion incubator. I think that's they have a lot of vitality and power, and they just fit into this certain ecological niche. Well, certainly in Quebec, where I am, where you have a lot of people whose parents were devout Catholics, and then the Catholic Church declined very rapidly in the 60s, and so the children were, their religious education was discontinued, but they all know about the Bible, but they feel this conflict between science and the Bible. And so then Rael comes along and he says that that Darwin is wrong, the Catholic Church is wrong, and he gives us a third possibility, which is that extraterrestrials created Adam and Eve from DNA. Mm-hmm. So he kind of he comes into the middle of this conflict between science and religion, and he presents a third possibility that sort of reconciles the two. And I think that's the big attraction, at least in Quebec, from what I've seen here.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this will continue? I mean, do you believe these organizations will continue to pop up, and that the existing ones will continue to gain members?
Well, we've always had baby religions or cults pop up. I mean, all through, you know, the centuries. It's rather like, you know, we always have weeds in our garden, and some people say, ew, that's a weed, and other people say, oh, no, it's delicious, you can eat it, like dandelion, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's the same with religion. I mean, whether or not the Raelians or Scientology will last another 100 years, I don't know. We can't really predict. But certainly some of them will continue on, and or they might, you know, change, like they might sort of creep up in another religion which borrows from their literature, or they might have schisms and separate. I mean, all sorts of things happen to religions over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what do you think of, I mean, this idea, why do you think it is then, like you said, that people need to subscribe to one view?
Well, partly it's, I think that if you want to run a new religion, you've got to have order and clarity. And it's sort of like if you're gonna conduct a church choir, you can't have people singing out of tune, you know, mm-hmm. or singing their own tunes. So you've got to kick out people who said, oh yeah, I've talked to the extraterrestrials too. You got to kick them out right away, or they'll start a little schism. And you've got to have one person who's got a hotline to the extraterrestrials and interprets it for everybody else. And then you have a unified community, you have a viable organization. I see it from a sociological point of view. It's just what works, you know, for a social organization.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's dangers in this, in these, you know, like many, I think, in society do feel, and it's probably because maybe it challenges their worldview, or at least it isn't in their scheme. But, you know, people have so overall, I think, a negative look on these groups that we've been talking about. Do you feel that that's warranted at all?
Well, you know, I tend to be one of these religion freedom activists myself. Mm-hmm. I sort of understand why it is, because religion or spirituality, it looks at the deepest things in life. And people don't like it when their deepest beliefs are challenged or disturbed. So it's kind of a natural reaction to get angry when someone, you know, says, oh, you know, my God doesn't like your God or something. Mm-hmm. Or has different beliefs about the nature, or, you know, about nature or say sexuality, gender, diet, the end of the world, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's disturbing to people because they like to have their, you know, their ethical system, they like to have it nice and clear and clean, and they don't like it muddy. And so when they come into contact with other belief systems, it's disturbing for them. And I think you have to almost develop, you know, you almost have to develop this kind of self-conscious sense of objectivity, and you have to create your own balancing act where you can walk in between different belief systems and not get upset, or you can watch yourself get upset and then not react, you know, because mm-hmm. I find as a sociologist, you know, here one minute I'm going to meetings of these black nationalists who say all white people have leprosy, you know, and I'm writing down my notes, yes, all white people have leprosy, you know. And then I'm visiting a patriarchal group that says women are less intelligent than men, and I say yes, and I write it down in my notebook, you know. So you've just got to, I think you've got to just develop your own tolerance, I guess, and not react, or if you react, you just watch yourself react, or you don't take it too serious, you know. It's just a game, you know. It's just, I mean, people are going to have different beliefs, and, you know, you got to get used to it, you know.
Right, right. I agree. I mean, I don't subscribe to any religious beliefs, but I totally stand up for the rights of others to have their own belief system. And that's why I feel, you know, people shouldn't make so much fun of these people claiming to have contact with these other beings and everything, because their beliefs are no stranger to me than, you know, the other religious beliefs. So it's fair for them to have that.
Well, what I found fascinating when I was at the UFO conference is you would have these people get up and talk about seeing a UFO or encountering an alien. Mm-hmm. And these are people who weren't necessarily religious or might have some very kind of standard predictable type of Christian fundamentalist, whatever background. But they would talk about these experiences with a real sense of wonder and awe and magic. And these are people who are, they're not professional storytellers, they're not actors. They would just try to describe the experience so that other people would, you know, hear them. And they really conveyed a sense of mystery and magic. And I was really impressed by that. And so there's something in a UFO encounter or a CE, you know, 1, 2, or 3, that has a sort of innate mystical or spiritual core. So you could create a religion. I mean, it's the ingredient for starting a religion. It's like, you know, you light a match and you could start a fire, you know. I mean, all these people would describe what was the essence of a spiritual experience and could, in fact, I mean, each one of them probably could have started a religion, you know, with a bit of luck or drive, whatever, you know. So I thought that was fascinating. And I think that's why we have UFO religions coming out of these spontaneous experiences that people have.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, and that's why I did my talk also in this realm, is that, you know, the idea, just simply the idea of extraterrestrials is much more influential on society, I think, than many give it credit.
I think it is. I mean, I saw this film recently. With Emma Watson, what was it called? Awakening. You know what I mean.
Life?
No. She's a linguist.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And she goes and she meets some aliens. And
Arrival.
That's it. That's
yeah.
It. Yeah. And, well, it actually reminded me of the book Ramtha by Clark, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's this feeling of awe or absolute mystery and encountering something that's so alien, it just blows your mind and you don't know what it is. But it's there was a real kind of spiritual, almost a spiritual aspect to that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, she learns how to time travel in a way because she can go back and be with her child who died before the child died. And she goes back and forth in time. So that's one of the messages in the film, that the extraterrestrials have taught her that time is something fluid, that you can go back and forth, you know.
Mm-hmm. With your books about all of these topics, what do you hope for, or do you hope for people to take away from it?
Well, I think what my mission is to describe these groups in a very detailed way,
mm-hmm.
and to really try to show them the way they really are, at least how I see, how they think they are and how I think they are. And then people will get a sort of more vivid and accurate view of what these groups are trying to do and the way they live. And they won't then just buy these, you know, anti-cult stereotypes which you read in the media about brainwashing and total control and how these people can't think critically, blah, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are fascinating little groups who are trying to do something really original in their own way. And often it's a temporary experiment that doesn't work. And a lot of these people leave after a year or two, but they have an extraordinary experience in which they learn something that they can, you know, use in their life. And so I think I'm trying to, well, one of my aim is just to entertain people, because I find these groups incredibly entertaining. I mean, that's where I get my fun, you know, is through research. But it's also to kind of broaden people's view so that they see there are different realities, or there are different ways of seeing the world, and they're all equally valid. I mean, it's really pathetic if we think that only our North American 21st century, you know, post-industrial liberal view is correct, and everyone else is primitive and has to be, you know, brought over to our our way of thinking. I mean, I think that's pathetic. I think it's nice that we have different cultures with completely different ways of seeing the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the world interesting and magical. And, you know, I find it actually quite upsetting that there's so much persecution. I mean, my last book that I wrote with Stuart Wright, you know, he wrote the book on Waco, Armageddon and Waco, and we collaborated in writing this book called Storming Zion, which is a study of government raids on religious groups. And so here you see, you know, the government behaving in a really violent and coercive way, you know, charging in with tanks and, you know, military equipment for minor little offenses, or offenses that really got nothing to do with war or drugs or the army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I can relate, because I feel the same way in that I am devoted to science and figuring things out. But the world can be magical if you let it. And that's what's great about these mysteries, or, like you said, these other points of view, is that they do allow that magic into life. And it's just the way you see the world. And it's kind of scary, like you said, the idea of not allowing all of this, or being, you know, unfortunately, kind of a knee-jerk base reaction, which is to attack stuff that's different, which is really unfortunate, because that's how we grow and that's how we make life interesting, is by wondering and exploring these different new and novel ideas.
Well, I see that you and I are on the same page here, Alejandro.
How have people reacted to your books? Has it been varied?
Well, there's been very different reactions depending on the book, you know. Mm-hmm. My first book, Moon Sisters, was very successful because it was a study of women's roles in new religions, and I got a lot of even got this fan letter from a guy who was in prison that I was a bit nervous about. But I would get very favorable reviews from grad students who were reading it and, you know, using it for their thesis if they're writing something on gender and religions, you know. And then my book on the Raelians, I got a big reaction because, you know, I'd written 6 articles on the Raelians, and then they announced the clone baby, and I had so many journalists, you know, showing up at my door on the phone. I had I had documentary film crews like running around my house and things. So that was very exciting because the Raelians were suddenly really famous, you know, and my research was suddenly relevant, you know, so that was a nice feeling. But then other books I've written, like everybody just ignores them and not one of them sells, and, you know, it depends.
Now, and finally, I guess, on the clone, do you think they really, because that was kind of strange in that they made a big deal about it, and they said they were going to share their work and what they had done, and then when it came time, they said, oh, no, we're not going to share anything, but we really did clone a baby. Do you believe they did?
Well, you know, it's really funny. Like, I was open to thinking that they might have really achieved it. And then when the parents of the baby supposedly said, we don't want the media, you know, barging in, and we're going to go undercover. Well, then the Raelians made several announcements. I remember one Raelian guide, you know, that's a leader, the leaders of the guides. He said, oh, but we've made all these other clones. They're all over the world. And, you know, in about 10 or 20 years, people are going to start noticing, and they will come to the fore, and then, you know, we will be vindicated, because they're pissed off by the media saying that it was all a hoax, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I heard another guide say, well, the reason we said that there was this baby Eve clone was simply to awaken the world and raise their consciousness that soon human cloning would be possible. So it's just a way of waking up humanity. I thought, yeah, that's a real cop-out, you know?
Yeah.
So you've heard there's different ways they've rationalized that whole event, you know. But I don't think... when you ask the Raelians about that, actually, when they come talk to my class, one student always asks that question, and they have quite different answers. So I don't think they've quite rationalized it, you know, in a consistent way.
Mm-hmm. And what was the, I never understood, what was the importance to their religion to clone people?
Well, actually, the whole... It's sort of like the creation story all over again, because they believe that this barren planet was colonized by extraterrestrials who created life, you know, in test tubes, basically, and created human beings from their own DNA. So if we can create human beings from our DNA, then we will be equal to these godlike extraterrestrials who created us. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, we're leaping into a new level, and in which we will be gods.
I see.
The other thing is, there's the promise of immortality. In his book, Yes to Human Cloning, Ryle says we can all clone, you know, versions of ourselves, and then we can cannibalize them for body parts, and we will be able to do accelerated growth. And so the idea is we will have physical immortality. The Raelians don't believe in the soul, right? So this was the excitement of human cloning, that we will be gods, we'll be as scientifically advanced as the aliens who created us, and we will be have the possibility of immortality.
Aha, that I get it now. Interesting, very interesting. It's all super, super fascinating. And as we mentioned, you've got several books. Where's the best place for people to find more information about your work?
Well, you just go on Amazon and look up Susan Palmer cults or something, and all my books pop up.
Perfect. So, and I'll put the link to all of your books on Amazon so people can get that in the show notes and the show description. Also, and I highly recommend everybody check it out. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, thank you, Alejandro. And that's very nice of you to promote my books.
For sure. I think this is all very fascinating. I'm so happy that you've taken the effort to take a look at these different groups.
Well, I wish more. I think we need more young researchers doing what I do. It's really fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Alejandro. Great talking to you.
You too. Thank you so much to Susan for being on the show today. What a fascinating topic. I really love the topic, obviously, but I think it's really important for all of us, you know, to think critically when it comes to all of these things. Of course, there are a lot of possibilities, but, you know, investing yourself too deeply can be a little bit dangerous. And you know, what's funny, you probably know these people, I know these people, who kind of jump from one faith to another. And whatever it is, they're just super invested in it until they find the new thing. And then the old thing, they're like, you know, oh, that was all BS. But now, you know, now I've got it all figured out. And they kind of go through life like that. It seems like there's a lot of people in this field like that. But the sad thing is a lot of people will spend a lot of money or give a lot of money to these people that they later feel are not credible or, you know, have not handled the money they've given them correctly. So, you know, don't get yourself in that situation. I think that all of this is really interesting. And who knows, you know, what's going on out there. And like we talked about, there are so many positive messages with some of these people who do feel they're getting this information from these third parties, whoever they be. And that's always a good thing. I mean, it seems intuitive that, you know, we should take care of each other. We should take care of the planet. But we always don't do those things. It's kind of funny. I am a huge fan of the Dalai Lama. And when you hear him talk, he talks about the basics and compassion and all of these things. And you're like, yeah, I know that. And they're the same kind of things we tell our kids, you know, what to do and how to act. But that doesn't mean we're, just because we know what to say, doesn't mean we know that, it doesn't register that that's how we're supposed to act. It's kind of funny that we tell our kids the way they should conduct themselves, but we often forget that message and forget ourselves to conduct ourselves in that manner. So it's always helpful to remember and have these mantras and things that remind us of, you know, these basics of treating people how we want to be treated and all of these things. So that's always a good thing. And I think organizations that do that, you know, more power to you. Or, you know, as long as you're not hurting people, whatever your beliefs may be. But it's also very interesting just how influential this whole topic. And I encourage you to go see my talk on the Congress where I even get into some numbers and statistics, but how influential this whole idea of extraterrestrials is in society right now. And I think it will continue to do so. Some of these religions will probably get bigger and gain some steam. And the older religions are kind of, you know, retracting. They are losing, at least here in the U.S., and in many cases, membership. And so just how we think and we believe is shifting and changing as time goes on. And that could be good or bad, but I think it's important to keep a pulse on that. And, you know, you all having an interest in this topic, you're not alone. A lot of people do. But what's unique about you all is that you're listeners to this show, so you're more thoughtful and critical of what you are digesting. At least that's what I'd like to believe. At least that's what I tell myself. You may feel that I'm a goofball and I'm full of it. But hey, we all have a right to believe what we believe. Anyway, I am a goofball. You're right if you do believe that. But thank you so much to Susan for joining us on the show. That was really, really cool. I really love that. You can find her on Amazon. If you just put in Susan J. Palmer, you'll find all of her books. Or that book on aliens was called Aliens Adored. So you'll be able to find her that way. And if you want to see her other titles, you just click on her author name and you'll see those. You guys are probably familiar with how Amazon works. So go check her out there. I've also got the link in the show description. And hopefully we'll hear more from her over time. I'm so happy that actually she got a hold of me and that she came to the Congress to really look more into all of this stuff. And obviously she spent quite some time pondering all of this and studying, and I thought she was really interesting. Thank you also to Martin Willis for joining us, of course. Otherwise, like I said, we did those Phoenix Lights videos, interviews. You can see those on my Facebook or at the Open Minds Facebook as well. And a lot of what I talked about was this new video that we released from James Fox. And this is some of the interview of Fife Symington talking about the Phoenix Lights, some of which people hadn't seen before. And James had shared that with us and let us release that. So that's on our YouTube, the Open Minds TV YouTube. Or if you go to openminds.tv, you're going to see it right there on the front page. UFO Congress news. So the dates, I have it up on the site, what the dates are. They're going to be the 14th to the 18th of February 2018. We'll still be in the same place, the beautiful Weekapaw Resort. Those of you who have been there know what a wonderful place that is. So we'll be there again next year. That's all the information I have up. Usually it's about June that we open up registration. So keep an eye out for that and for the speakers that will be coming out. If you want to stay up to date on everything, by the way, join our email list. So the email list you can find on the front page of the UFO Congress and also on the front page of openminds.tv or in the contact page of openminds.tv. You'll be able to sign up there. And we send out emails typically bi-weekly. We haven't sent one. We sent one out just last week, but prior to that, it had been a while. So sign up for that because you find out what's the latest and greatest, such as on our video on demand right now. You can go watch the James Fox presentation from the UFO Congress, and you can watch the Richard Dolan presentation, something he put together about the media specifically for the 2017 UFO Congress. So you could go watch that as well. So really cool. I always encourage people to go do that. I think it's a great deal, you know, for like $5, you get tons of videos and lectures. And some of these, you know, are exclusive that you'll never see anywhere. Actually, all of them are. So go check that out. Other than that, I want to thank Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. I want to thank Slice of Sci-Fi. Go check that out. It's a sci-fi podcast that is going to have me on. And the next, I think today or something, but Slice of Sci-Fi, how cool is that? But, thank you to you, the listener. I will do my best to have another show, and I'm planning on having a show next week. So, I will talk to you soon. Until then, adios, muchachos.